Mr. Ben with eight arms. An octo thought.
That's an octopus, you idiot.
A beard!
Three beards. Well, two visible beards and one invisible beard.
Welcome to episode 16 of season 2 of Lug Radio.
We're all bearded this week, aren't we?
We're all bearded, that's right.
We are short, one short person.
We're short of a short person.
We are.
Matt Revelle is not here, again.
Poor Matt.
To be fair, we did change the day on him.
Yeah, we did.
And he's coming to the end of his course as well, so...
he's short life.
So, I'm John O'Bacon.
I'm Abe Bolcher.
And I'm Stuart Langridge.
So, boys, what are we going to talk about on this show?
We're going to talk about... we're going to talk to Michael Meeks from the Open Office and Gnome Camp and Novell
Two
Camp.
Very important projects.
I'm going to talk about ZeroConf.
Yes.
We're going to talk about communities and what makes them cool.
And we're going to read a shitload of letters again.
We are indeed. So,
you know, when we said keep sending them in, perhaps not sending them in.
Keep sending them in.
We genuinely love receiving all your letters, even though we can't read them all out.
It's superb. And of course, we're going to talk about the fantastic event that is Lug Radio Live, and we've got some new information on exhibitors and things like that.
Not to forget the Distro Wars.
So keep tuned. We've got a jam-packed show. Let's get it going.
Let's get it on.
Open Office.
Yep.
They're very cool.
They are very cool.
I use them both.
Together.
And one bloke is involved with them both. And
yeah.
His name
is Michael Meeks.
He's Michael Meeks.
Hello.
Hi, Mike. You're on Lug Radio Live.
Hi, Mike.
What a privilege.
Excellent. For us.
How are you doing, Mike? What are you working on at the moment?
Well, just before you phoned, I was working on Mono Bridge for Uno, which is the component model of OpenOffice. Which sounds boring, but in reality, it's exciting. Because, you know, Mono sort of kicks ass, and plugging into OpenOffice, which is likewise, is, you know, going to make a great combination. So, I've been working hard on that for a few days now.
Fantastic.
All right, cool. So, what are you hoping to do once you've got a bridge in between Mono and OpenOffice?
Oh, well, you know, I think the demo potential is incredible, you know. I mean, with all of those things, it's vital to have a demo that, you know, looks good. I'm always amazed, looking back at some of these, you know, magazines that get published. And I'm sure, you know, your laudable publication isn't one of them. But you see, some of these screenshots that you know you created once and could never have been created again, you know, because you hacked the code so that it just worked that once. And, you know, that kind of screenshot is important.
What are you trying to say, Michael?
I'm not trying to say anything, you know. I'm just padding. I think there are lots of applications. One of the most interesting things with OpenOffice, obviously, because of Linux penetration in the server market, is... making sort of content management systems, and you know, you can read this document in any format.
You can
auto conversions. I mean, there's lots of scripting stuff, and you can do some of that with Java at the moment.
So,
we'd like to make that available to budding C#.
Just talking
programs.
About OpenOffice there, depending on Mono or on Java. I mean, it's quite a controversial decision to make it depend on Java or Mono. Just explain to me. I mean, I don't understand why it has to depend on anything necessarily.
Right. Yeah, that's a really great question.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think it's amazing that, you know, there's this discussion of 40 or so emails on the mailing list. And, you know, and you get in on it, you know. That's what I call a scoop. I mean, you know, ear to the ground. Either way, basically, depending on things is very loose. So because, you know, it's just really wonderful component model, you know, there's no real need for Java or Mono to be a dependency for OpenOffice at all. And yet, you can install a separate package so that you can script it with that. The problem comes down to the fact, well, there are two problems, really.
One is always two.
There are always lots of problems. Well, there are mainly two. One is that it turns out to be a lot easier to write software in either using Mono or using Java. And that's really one of the reasons why, you know, Novell's investing in Mono so heavily. I mean, the side effect of this is that there are a lot of people who, you know, are not very good programmers, but they can program in Java. And you really notice this when you see their C++ that they write, you know? they don't think you need a free memory, for example, or any of this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. So anyway, at the end of the day... if you want to employ programmers, you know, you can choose a really expensive C++ programmer, you know, that frees memory,
okay.
Or you can have a really cheap Java programmer that doesn't, you know, and so, well,
those mono programmers are even
you
cheaper.
Get this choice, you know, two Java programmers or one, you know, kick-ass C++ program.
I see.
What people tend to think is that, you know, you should get some Java programmers in and, you know, they'll provide those lines of code that you really need to bump your lines of code count, you know, because
yeah.
Obviously the more lines of code you have, the better.
That's obviously the
work for the Mozilla people.
yeah, something like that.
So, bear with me then, you've yeah. got the bulk of OpenOffice which is written in C.
C++, really.
Plus,
yeah.
I was just about to say. Plus, and you've also got bits of it which use Java as part of either the build process or usage for running the thing itself. You've also potentially got a mono bridge there.
Yeah.
There was, at least in the past, some Python scripting.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's someone
and you've got,
Python.
And you've got Star Basic or whatever it's called.
Star Basic, yeah.
For writing macros.
That's right.
Does anyone understand all this stuff?
No.
Sorry, are we both, should anyone understand all
well,
this
I
stuff?
Don't know, but hopefully the idea is, you know, that you've got used to using Java's system console printf or something, and so, you know, you can use that in your OpenOffice script. You know, you can write hello world thousands of times. And,
right.
and then similarly, if you like Python's, oh, I don't know what it would be called. Stuart?
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Whatever it is. You can use that, you know. So what you've learned then can be easily applied to this wonderful new rich sphere of component development and so on. So, you know, that's the idea. And, you know, it makes a lot of sense, I think, in some ways. Of course, without the mono piece on Linux, you'd be able to write .NET stuff on Windows and script OpenOffice, but then not transfer anywhere else, which is particularly pointless. So, you know, that's obviously helping interoperability there.
Micah, in terms of this, obviously there's this massive code base that, uh-huh. that you're trying to get your head around and trying sure. to progress and refine. How have you found it in terms of actually getting more hackers in on the game? And is it a case of modularizing the code so it's easier to take one little chunk of it and hack on it, or does everybody need to understand this behemoth that's before them?
Yeah, I think... Actually, OpenOffice is really a victim of two things. Again, everything is twos. So the one problem is that people like to write their own things that are new, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the other is that it is a big bloated, you know, well, it's not really bloated, it's just really big.
Yeah.
And it turns out that, you know, people like to sit down and write their own spreadsheet. And, you know, I've done it myself.
Right.
And it's
just knocking out a spreadsheet when you've got a few spare minutes? Is that
yeah.
fairly current,
yeah,
a common thing in the Meeks
yeah,
household?
I wrote a spreadsheet in Java to do the Christian Union accounts. You know how it is when you've got a task you don't want to do,
yeah.
and you do almost everything else to avoid doing it?
Yeah.
Well, in this case, the thing to do to avoid doing it was writing the spreadsheet to do the accounts. Anyway, so in the end, I wrote this little nasty spreadsheet and disliked the Java printing model and, you know... And then having written all this grid control business, then they invented Swing and sort of obsoleted everything.
Right.
Yeah, I was depressed about that. So I quit Java and spreadsheet writing for a while. But the problem is that people out there like to do that, and they like to start from, you know, scratch and do something and learn something, and that's great. And when you get to OpenOffice, really what you learn is something different. And that skill is, I would argue, far more useful.
Right, yeah.
Which is the ability to take a huge and complicated piece of software, understand it, and even better, understand someone else's misunderstanding that created a bug, for example.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And then fix that, you know, elegantly.
Michael, how important do you think OpenOffice is, or capturing the office market is, to getting Linux on the desktop?
I think it's absolutely crucial.
Yeah, I do. Yeah,
sure.
Totally.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's a huge piece. I think it's less important than it was thought to be. You know, I mean, people used to think that you only use computers to write documents and print them out.
Yeah.
But then, you know, we started using them to collaborate and, you know, essentially surf the web and waste our employees' time, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, there are these other functions, like email, that are, you know, obviously important in collaboration and
yeah.
shared calendaring and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
you know, documents still play a large part in that. Definitely.
OpenOffice is, I think, perceived to be quite close to Microsoft Office in terms of the way it looks and the way it works.
I'm glad you think that. That's great.
I wouldn't necessarily agree.
It has been pointed out to me repeatedly that not everybody thinks this.
Yeah.
I think quite a few people do. Would you say that that's not the case at all?
I think we're improving substantially to bring us to bring ourselves to feature parity with Office. Obviously, there's a long way to go. You know, Microsoft have this gigantic team of, you know, extremely talented people working probably not that efficiently, but they've been doing it for 10 years. We haven't. So,
do you think that going after Office in terms of attempting to look like it and work like it and whatnot is the way to Office adapting, because it makes it easy for people to move from Microsoft Office to OpenOffice? Or is it just the way it seems to have worked out? Or is that the only way that a decent Office suite could be designed?
No, I should think there are lots of ways to design an Office suite, and I think there are many ways in which OpenOffice has almost preempted or, you know, beaten Microsoft to the post. To be honest, I'm really not an advanced power user of OpenOffice.
No.
And this is a serious problem, because it turns out the people that file bug reports are hackers, you know, people who are, you know, obviously clear up and aware of what a bug is and how to report it in a concise and helpful way. And they tend not to be the people that use OpenOffice in general. And so bug reports you get are either useless or there are not enough of them, or people don't realize that you can get the software fixed, you know. And there's this huge education problem there. But anyway, that's a rather separate issue. It looks like Microsoft Office. I mean, I guess there is a large training advantage in that. But, you know, I think we have, you know, for example, with style support and things like that, you know, got some quite nice things underlying that that are quite powerful metaphors that are somewhat different.
In terms of, Michael, in terms of, I've got a question that kind of comes in two parts now. From as somebody, obviously we're all people who sort of observe a lot of open source projects and the progress that's made on them, and what part of this is reading blogs and mailing lists and things such as that. With the OpenOffice project, it seems like there's less transparency there. I don't mean as in people are hiding things, but people don't seem to talk necessarily so much about what they're doing. They seem to, in many cases, just get on and do it. I mean, I was astonished when I used the beta of OpenOffice 2, just how much was in there. I was expecting to have heard about a lot of it before I actually used it, like with, for example, Planet Gnome, where you generally hear about things 6 months before they actually go out. But what I wanted to know was, is there any efforts going into kind of improve this sort of process so people know what's going on? And the second part of the question is, what kind of interactions do you have with people such as Sun and other contributors to the OpenOffice project?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. So, yes, the communication is not wonderful, but I think this is partly a structural problem and partly just bad, just a lack of understanding. You know, I think there's really good faith on every side. There's, in some places, a lack of competence, but there's, you know, there's a real willingness to, you know, open up and be this open source project. I think the problem is perhaps that the whole idea was oversold initially, and the reality is that, you know, it takes a long time to build a community and nurture it, and it takes, you know, getting the simple basics right. So, for example, there's one of these really tragic things where the mailing list all mangled reply to. So, you know, as as a newbie, you post a list saying, you know, I've got this problem, can you help me? You know, if you're lucky, some developer will respond really quickly. But you will never see his reply because it will go to the mailing list only. And this is a profoundly stupid thing. But unfortunately, changing it, you know, it just gets very complicated. There's a thing called Sourcecast, and then there's service-level agreements with CollabNet, and then there's, you know, Sun, and one blames the other, and it's not a big issue, and some people think reply to mailing is a good thing, which also gets in the way. Anyway, so the net result is mailing lists are pretty useless and, you know, sort of full of people who like to mail a lot.
Okay. You know. Just before we move on from OpenOffice, what can we do to help? Not just the three of us.
What can you do to help?
The community. What would you like us
to do?
If the answer is dive into the OpenOffice code and start hacking C++, then, you know, sorry, ask somewhere else. But but what could we do if we wanted to help OpenOffice get better?
Right. So I think if you have skills, relatively technical skills, then you can, you know, check out the latest milestone builds and file good bugs. You know, when I open this file that's cut down to this, you know, minimal subset of some weird table plus something else, it doesn't quite work. Or, you know, it doesn't quite look the same in Microsoft Office, and whatever else, and that sort of good quality bug report is really helpful.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, calming flames, like this Java issue, for example, is just a non-starter, you know. So I've done a load of work, and again, it's not been well communicated, to try and make new and different free Java implementations work. You know, they've put engineering effort in, and there's just no malice there. They're using the best engineering solution for them, for their product.
Sure,
and they're very open to other people using different solutions, and they've done the work to make that possible, you know. So, you know, they're just... As you say, you know, a bit of a communication issue there.
So I mean,
communicating those things.
So moving the topic forward a little bit, and moving on to GNOME. Obviously, you know, you're an established GNOME developer. There seems, I can imagine that as somebody who worked for Zimian and now works for Novell, there's obviously been a lot of focus on GNOME with your career.
Sure.
And in many ways, there seems to be a lot of work going into GNOMifying OpenOffice in different ways. So, what kind of efforts are coming from that direction? And are you finding a lot of help and assistance from other GNOME developers who aren't exclusively OpenOffice developers?
Okay, so yes. Well, the good news is that if you've used OpenOffice in virtually any Linux distribution for the last, year and a half, you will have got something that integrates quite well with the native GTK look and feel and the theming, and the icons hopefully won't have sucked quite as badly as before. You know, I mean, there's beautiful new artwork. So that's all good. In 2.0, the news is really old news that they're starting to put that upstream, and that will be, you know, shipping out of the box with StarOffice. So I guess that's positive if you want to buy StarOffice.
Right.
You know, so, and one of the positive benefits I think that's come out of that is just increasing the, you know, sort of reminder factor on Sun that we really need to release more frequently than 18 months.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
go on.
You know, I mean, previously Sun have had this 9 month or 18 month schedule, so every 18 months they freeze and 9 months later they release. And it's just really, really bad, you know, for getting the news out about new features and momentum and so on.
Yeah, difficult to kind of fit in with the GNOME stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much for talking to us, Michael. We'd like to come back to you at some point in the future and say, what's going on with OpenOffice?
Yeah.
So,
sure.
If you'd be happy to do that, that'd be great.
Yeah, that's no problem. It's always a pleasure to speak to you. Have a great evening.
Fantastic. And by the way, keep updating the blog, because it never ceases to amaze me how much one person can fit into 24 hours, as you seem to be able to achieve.
I tell you, the trick is, don't read other people's blogs. I don't read anyone, so you know, there you are. Anyway, lovely to speak to you.
Take care, Michael.
Okay,
bye. Bye. That was interesting. Good
that
to
was
hear
good. Michael Meeks.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's nice to actually hear something about the OpenOffice project.
Yeah, yeah.
Massive wall of blackness, and every now and again they go, ta-da, new release. And everyone goes, fucking hell, what was that like?
I don't agree with what you said about OpenOffice looking like Office.
I mean, I don't
see how different you can make Office packages look.
That was
but
what,
I think they're doing a good job.
That was exactly why I said, is that the only way an Office suite can be? Right. I mean, the example in my head here is Apple's new thing. Because they've obviously decided that it's not worth competing with Word at all.
Right.
Because it isn't, because Word's going to eat their lunch, is the way they feel about it.
Were you talking about OpenOffice 1 or OpenOffice 2 looking like Office?
2 is, I think, less so than 1.
Yes, I think so, yeah.
So they are moving away.
I really like the look of 2.
That's something that he said, that they are diverging a bit now. But possibly that is the only way you can make an Office suite, which is why I made that point.
Well, I mean, you need bold, you need italic, you know, that's the kind of stuff you need.
The thing is as well, I mean, the issue of retraining is critically important as well for getting people to migrate over. As much as we don't necessarily want to look like a clone of Microsoft Office.
Deliberately making it look different just for the sake
and
of
Apple
it.
And Apple have got the license to do that, because they've spent their entire career doing things differently.
I don't care about Apple.
You know,
Firefox doesn't look like IE, and people seem to think that's a good thing.
Yes, it does.
It's got an address bar. It's got links.
It looks exactly like IE.
Okay, I mean,
it's got menus.
Okay, from a mile in the air, then yeah, I suppose it does. And that's kind of the thing.
It's not
a mile in the air.
It's
talking about.
It's got controls in exactly the same place, and it operates exactly the same. Yeah, it might have slightly different menu options, but it's got.
But then why doesn't Safari look different?
What you're saying
is that Apple have made this big effort to differentiate themselves from Microsoft by having a different looking word processor in Pages, then why didn't they make Safari
look different? I think Safari looks about as different as it could.
But I don't care
how different Safari looks. /me does not care.
Anyway, I think we should also emphasise to our listeners how how important it is speaking to Michael Meeks, because he is probably one of the most critical developers with OpenOffice.
It's interesting when he said, not only have you got to submit your bugs, you've got to submit useful bugs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I suspect means they're getting a lot of, I started up this document and it didn't work. End of bug.
So I think we all probably need training, well, maybe not you guys, but need training in what a useful bug submission
what
is.
What constitutes a useful
and
bug,
what
yeah.
a rubbish one is.
There's plenty of documentation about this.
Quite possibly, because I don't submit bugs, as I said before, because I don't really know what to put.
A bloke called Simon Tatham wrote up he's a bloke who writes Putty.
Right.
And he wrote a really good document about how to submit a bug. And it basically said sensible stuff, you know. Try and say, I did this, I did this, I did this, it did this, I expected it to do this, right. This is what the differences yeah. were, and try and give as much information about your environment as you can.
Mm-hmm.
The idea being that you can get that a developer can reenact the bug. Because if you say, I clicked on bold and it didn't make it bold when I had some text selected, and then the developer selects some text and clicks on bold and it makes it bold, then there's nothing else they can do with your bug report, other than come back to you and go, does it still happen? Can you do it again? Which version are you running? No, so try and tell people that sort of thing.
What if
front.
I did...
Simon Tatham's document.
I selected some text... Closed down office, copied it to the clipboard, closed down office, and yep. when I pasted it, it wasn't there.
Oh! A bloke wrote... A bloke wrote us an email, which says that Excel 2003 does that.
What?
If you cut...
They broke the clipboard.
If you copy some text, if you copy some cells in Excel 2003,
yeah.
and then shut down Excel... Yeah. Open it up again and try and paste. It isn't there anymore. Got a laugh
so,
at that.
So maybe they've got the Linux clipboard now.
This is so good. Yeah, they inspired from it.
The bloke says maybe they've illegally ripped off some X.org code.
remember, it uses 0k of memory.
The weird thing, from my perspective, just listening to them talking, I hadn't really thought about it. Quite a few times I've tried to open up Word documents in OpenOffice,
yeah.
and they haven't worked.
Really?
And it never even crossed my mind to file a bug.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know why.
Yeah.
I mean, with ordinary software, I'd think, that doesn't work. File a bug.
Yeah.
And I never have with OpenOffice, and I've never thought to do so, which is fucking stupid of me, and I don't know why I've never thought that.
I think what was interesting listening from as well is that, talking about the communication between them and the community.
Yes.
I think with open source software, a lot of it is, in many cases, how much they... come across to the people who read up on it. So, like, when, for example, I subscribe to planetopenoffice.org, and that's got people's blogs on there who hack on it. And there's not a great amount on there.
Right.
And that gives you the impression that there's not really much going on with it.
Maybe they're too busy doing stuff to write blogs.
But that's exactly the thing. And the thing is that in many ways, better communication would possibly encourage more developers. Because if you've got loads of developers saying, we're doing this, and we're doing this, and we're doing that. And I think that's part of the reason why GNOME has kind of become quite a popular project, because they've got really good communication. But we'll talk about the community in a later segment.
Indeed. No, I thought it was interesting for him to explain why they made it depend on Java, and what did you make of this Mono bridge thing? So I mean,
I don't really know enough about it, to be honest.
Am I wrong in thinking that it would depend on Java and Mono?
I think what the Mono bridge will do is it will allow you to talk to UNO components. UNO is the component model for OpenOffice.
Okay.
And I think that will allow you to talk to UNO components from Mono, from Mono languages.
Okay.
But it won't need Mono.
That's a relief.
In the same way that you don't need Java to compile it.
Mm.
And you don't need Java to run it. You just miss out on a few things
if
people decided to implement them in Java. So if Novell come up with a brilliant new addition to OpenOffice, but it's written in Mono and uses the Mono bridge, then it won't be packaged by Red Hat, for example.
In
the same way that anything that's in there that requires Java and can't be compiled on a free Java thing... isn't in Debian's packaging of OpenOffice.
And in any case, all of this might become irrelevant with the Java. If you know, with all the work that's going on with these various free Java implementations,
the Apache Harmony,
and of course the Harmony things. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, excellent.
Well, that actually means it's time for Distro Wars.
Distro Wars.
Distro Wars.
What are we doing this week?
We're going to do world domination.
Potential
for world domination.
Yeah.
Which of the distributors can be the next big thing and dominate the world?
The next Windows.
Basically.
Not in terms of nastiness, just in terms of running on everyone's machine.
Yeah, massive success. So we're obviously going to be doing plus five. There's huge potential for them to be
minus five. They ain't got hope.
They ain't got a hope in
them. Go home. They got no hope.
Jono Bacon, score for Zandros.
Oh, Zandros.
Okay, right. Here we go.
Zandiosa Ross.
Yes, we're going to keep it short this time, aren't we? Because we're bollocks,
aren't we? Which apparently does not stand for, or does not mean crap, Ross. After we got slagging on the forums about that.
So Zandros, potential for world domination. I think they haven't got massive potential, but they have a bit. So I'm going to give them probably plus two. Because I think they've got potential.
I think they've got potential.
Sure? Yeah, because the kind of people who we are aren't necessarily running the world. So we're not necessarily going to be picking them. I'm thinking about other people here. And Zandros can appeal.
Okay. Well, like you, I'm going to give them a two, but I'm going to give them minus two.
Oh, my God. Hey. I'm so excited.
Yeah, now we're going to keep to integers this time, aren't we?
Integers.
Yes, integers.
Juicy whole numbers.
Integral scores
for you.
Only.
No, I think you're going to get into integers. I'm not.
No, I would promise. Integral scores. It was too hard to add up last week.
So, minus two. I don't think they've got much chance. I mean, they've got a little bit of a chance, but not too much.
Is it a fat chance?
They got two chances.
Fat chance.
Fucking fat chance.
Fucking Jimmy Hill chin.
You've got a fucking Jimmy Hill chin.
Yeah, I think the type of chance they've got is a chance in Norfolk, in that they've got Norfolk in chance of dominating the world.
Score, Ginger Man.
I think Zandros would absolutely love to dominate the world, but I can't see it happening, so I'm going to score them a zero.
Well, that's middle of the road. That's a bit of a chance.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The left of king of the
road. That's me being a bit kinder than otherwise, because we got slagging on the forums that I might have misinterpreted Zandros a bit.
Okay.
He's fickle. Okay, what's next?
Just thick, I think.
Who's next on your list?
Antonio, a red hat.
You are very thick, that's right.
And long and round.
You are round, there's no doubt about that. Plump and round. Anyway. sorry, what was next?
Red hat.
I think Red Hat have got tremendous chance of being the next big thing. Good relationship with the community, some good take up in the enterprise and all the rest of it, blah, 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 blah. I'd give them a plus four.
Oh.
Yes.
Four for Red Hat.
Well, I'd give them two, because, yes, they've certainly got the potential. There is an element of, they've been around a long time. If they haven't done it yet, then...
Yes.
Yeah? Okay, so yeah. I'm going to say two.
Is that a symptom of the company or a symptom of Linux?
I don't really know.
Do you know what the word symptom means, Aid?
Symptom?
Yeah.
It's like, you know when you get that wart on the end of your dick, that's a symptom.
Oh, yeah, okay. You know that galloping knobrush.
Anyway, moving swiftly on. I feel much the same as Aid. Red Hat, I think they've got a reasonable chance of doing it, but they've been around longer than pretty much any other Linux distribution, and they haven't done it. But I take Jono's point on board that perhaps that's just because Linux wasn't ready for winning. But then again,
for women.
Linux now is a lot better than, say, Windows 95 was then, but was Linux then a lot worse than Windows 95? I don't know. Have the two things kept rough parity as they've moved along? Okay. I'm not seeing why it has the potential to
this
win
now. This
is
your short answer, is it?
Over Windows XP or Longhorn, when it didn't have the potential to win then over
yes,
Windows 95.
Yes, we know you've got a Longhorn.
Thank you.
So I'd score them a three, midway between the two of you.
Okay.
Jono,
likes to be this way between the two of us, doesn't he, Jono?
He does, yes.
John's a bit fine thing. Ubuntu, Jono.
Now, this is a difficult one.
Potential to take over the world. Come on.
You see, I think the thing that...
Because they're fairly new.
I think the thing that could potentially prohibit Ubuntu from taking over the world is the fact that they don't appear to have much of a kind of a corporate face. And they also don't appear to... they seem to lack a lot of the stuff that Linspire has in terms of supplementary stuff for getting Linux on regular people's machines. So it's kind of like... But on the flip side of that, you know, everybody already knows that we love Ubuntu, and it's just such a superb piece of software. So...
Yeah, I do.
This is a tough one. I'd say... And I'm not trying to be hopeful, but I'd probably give them a plus 3.5... Sorry, I'm going to have to do a half.
What way is that an integer?
It is now. I've changed the programming world forever.
Mathematics world.
Well, that's
integers around before programs were.
Yeah, but it was shit. Integers weren't fun until programming came out. When was it fun?
I'm not clear they're fun now, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but they're more Ubuntu.
Aid Ubuntu.
I'm actually going to say 3, because I know they're quite new, but they're quite... Because of that, I think we don't really know what they can do. So, you know, one of those horses that's, like, quite new, but and the odds are quite high, so you think, oh, I'll put a bit of money on that, because it's a bit of a... Yeah, say 3.
So you're a gambler, man, are you?
Not at all.
Right.
Again, I'd be much the same. I think I'd... Well, since John has scored them 3.5, I can score them 3.5 as well. Because, like you say, they are new. I think that there's a lot of potential there because they're going about things in the right way.
It's a very unknown quantity.
A lot of it, yeah, it is unknown. It's unrealised potential at the moment. But because they're approaching things in the right way,
yeah.
I think that right way does have the potential to take over the world more than trying to clone Windows does. And trying to do things the way that we've always done them.
Yeah.
And therefore, approaching things in that way is promising. So I'd say 3.5.
And Mark Shuttleworth is ridiculously rich.
He is. Not as rich as Gates. I mean, he's got
he's
a lot...
He's not as gay as rich.
Well... he's libelous.
I was just going to make one other point. We've got to also remember the fact that when Red Hat brought their first distribution out and they started becoming relevant, it was a different time in the kind of timeline of Linux.
I just picture some music fading. You know?
it was a different time.
It was a different time. A different world.
Used to push my bike uphill with Red Hat 4.
Nothing but red in them days.
That's all we had.
Red Hat. All we had was Red Hat. But me dad had Slackware.
No, Red Hat, you were lucky.
Anyway, I was making a... Yeah, basically, when Red Hat came out, it was a different time, and now Ubuntu's coming out. And I think certain things are different now, and things have shifted in many ways... the whole open source and the ideology of open source.
Ubuntu just spreads it straight out the fridge.
Yeah, it spreads it straight out the fridge.
Yeah,
because the market is probably more more acceptable of it than it was maybe 5 years ago. That's one of the points.
Gentoo
or Gentoo, as some people call it.
Gentoo.
I don't think there's much chance for world domination.
You've just said exactly what we're thinking.
Much as I admire the Gentoo people, I really do. I mean,
minus 1,000.
I hope people don't get the wrong idea, but I do honestly admire them. I think that it's too niche, to be honest, in the same way that Linux from scratch is too niche.
So what's your score?
Minus 5.
Okay.
Everything he just said.
Minus 5?
Yep.
No
chance.
I think that... I don't know if this counts. I can see it being a platform on which someone builds a distribution which could take over the world.
No.
But
not a chance.
Well, no. Because you'd get rid of the compilation stuff, basically.
But that's the whole point of it.
Bear with me. That's why I said I'm not sure if it counts. That certainly... Whatever they build, it wouldn't be Gentoo.
Just speak the shit.
I don't think... That counts, and therefore I'm going to score Gentoo minus 5 on the grounds that you could build the distro on top of Linux from scratch, and in fact everyone has built the distros on top of Linux from scratch essentially, so minus 5 for Gentoo.
If you just take all of the compilation stuff away from Gentoo, doesn't it become Slackware?
Well, yeah, that's
I don't mean that in a derogatory fashion to either Gentoo or Slackware people, but
or the Linux architecture,
because Slackware seems to be a fairly pure distribution, you know.
Well, Gentoo's still got Emerge. So it then becomes
but
like...
But you wouldn't need that if you're taking away all the compilation stuff.
Well, no, because then you...
Because you'd have no package format.
We've got some interesting letters about Gentoo. We should read that later.
But then you'd get binary packages, and you'd get them with Emerge.
You don't get binary packages that much for Slackware, though, do you? Do you?
Don't know.
I don't honestly know. I haven't used Slackware for years. Anyway, sorry, we digress.
Yep. Linspire. La 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 la. Linspire.
5-0.
You see, I think they've got great potential in conquering the consumer market, but not the enterprise market.
I think they've got the grey vote.
So I'm.
What does that mean?
The purple rinse vote. I'm going to give them
purple helmet vote.
I'm going to give them a fairly middle of the road score because they can conquer half of the market. So I'd probably give them a plus 2.5. There we go. Silence. Yep. As everyone thinks about Linspire.
5-0. Yeah, I'd give them 2. I would. I think there's definitely potential there.
Yeah, definitely.
And the markets that they're aiming for.
They've got their
big markets.
Haven't they transformed us? In our views, I mean,
they have dramatically. I think
it's those bright lights and all that brainwashing that we went through before.
Yeah,
exactly.
The Carmony Ray.
Exactly. I mean, as NTK pointed out this week, it was kind of, you know, we believe in free agent. Oh, shiny thing. Lynn Spire, much the same as you two. I don't think that they've got a foothold in the corporate market, but I think if they started to make serious inroads into the home market, then they'd end up partnering with someone like Novell, who are making big inroads into the corporate market, but not the home market.
Or
so,
get bought by
so you'd have Linvel or Novspire or something.
Nobspire.
Nobspire. And everyone,
that's better, isn't it?
And everyone will be using Nobspire Linux in 5 years' time. So
I'm pretty sure no one's going to be using a distribution called Nobspire Linux.
But if they are, remember where you heard it first, and we'll have a 5% royalty.
Should we maybe register Nobspire.com?
I'll call them. I'll give them a 2, I think.
Ooh.
Because again, I can see them, as I said, I can see them taking over half of it and then getting involved with something which takes over the whole thing.
So it's kind of like, in terms of world domination, it's kind of Asia domination, or the Americas domination.
Yeah,
about half the world, with Hawaii included, thrown in.
See, that's an interesting point. We're talking about world domination.
Yeah.
But how much of the how many of the districts that we're using have got decent
language locales and stuff like that?
Asian localization, for example. I
that's
mean,
why we scored so
an awful lot of people in Japan, as I understand it, use Turbo Linux.
Yeah.
Basically, and nobody uses it.
And Ruby on Rails.
Yeah, exactly. Because again, there's a Japanese thing. There's a lot of Japanese documentation, and I don't know how Ubuntu and Red Hat and Zandros are in that kind of environment.
It's interesting because the distributions like Red Hat and Zandros, and to a point, Linspire, seem very Western, if you know what I mean. Whereas Ubuntu and obviously Turbo Linux and Debian seem a bit more kind of all over the place.
I'd say. Do you think they're about Ubuntu?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, mainly because it hails from Debian, and because one of the core targets for Mark Shuttleworth is to make it useful in Africa. So I think that kind of focus on
the Linspire people are trying very hard. One of the things that Carmody said is that they're trying to push it a lot out to developing worlds, so people don't know what the web is, and therefore they've got little.
But that might be
that's why they're
in Mexico
so high
and
on
in, and in Brazil and so on.
And that's
Novell, Johnny,
South America.
Novell.
Yeah.
Oh. I think Novell have got a very good shot at it, to be honest. Cause
as do I.
They're newer than Red Hat.
They've got floppy hairstyles.
They have got floppy hairstyles.
You should never underestimate that with when world domination is afoot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the fop. I think I'm probably, out of everyone, I think they've got the biggest chance, so I'm going to give them a +5.
Ooh.
So,
I thought I was going to be pretty radical in giving them a 4. But you beat my 4 with your 5.
I'm just doing it for attention.
Okay.
I'm an attention seeker.
Novell, I think, are the inverse of Linspire, in that I think they've got a good chance on the corporate desktop, and to some extent that might filter through into the home desktop. But
that's a good point.
They don't seem to be targeting the home desktop very much, and they'll go, meh, 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 Susie. But as I've said before, my perception is that Susie is dropping off a bit. Recently, whether that's just my perception, or whether Novell have diverted resources away from it to concentrate on NLD and Mono,
right,
and stuff like that.
I take your point that they're aiming for the corporate desktop, and they wouldn't disagree with that.
And I can see if they get into the corporate desktop, and as I say, Linspire, for example, make big inroads into the home, then they'll partner with them. So I'd give them a 3.
Okay, cool. And is that the lot?
That is the lot.
So what?
Drum roll.
Do you need some music?
Drum roll on it. Yeah. No music. Oh. No music required.
Can we do it in 5 places? In 5th place to 4th place.
In 5. There were 6 distributions.
Keep up, Johnny.
In 6. Gentoo with -15, the lowest possible score.
But does that mean
for world domination?
So they've got the ability of, I don't know, high school domination. we need to put this into kind of perspective.
I think we're looking at anthill domination.
Anthill domination. Yep, that sounds fair.
Okay.
The anthill mob.
5. Zandros with around 0.
Okay, so that's about football pitch domination.
Yep.
With the players included.
Yep.
Because they need to use Zandros.
Okay, in 4.
In 4. Linspire with 6.5.
Ooh, that's quite a step up.
Which is maybe...
Difference in scores.
I'd say a large town.
A large
town or a small city.
A large town, small city.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. So can you imagine Linspire City? Can you imagine living?
Can you imagine trying to open the doors to Linspire City?
Wedging them.
In three. Red Hat with 9 points.
In third place.
So, okay, that's in third place. So I think we're talking about a good state or county at that point.
Oh, no, I'd have said that probably goes up to a small country, sort of Luxembourg or maybe Belgium.
Are we bordering on the continent?
Liechtenstein.
Oh, no, Liechtenstein's tiny.
Hawaii?
I'd have said that's a small country like Belgium.
Belgium.
No, that's tomato and cheese. That's Hawaiian.
Shut up.
Get on with it.
Jesus. Second place, Ubuntu with 10 points.
Yeah. Right. So
which I would say was a medium-sized country like France.
I can't believe Ubuntu have come above Red Hat in world dominance.
There's quite a difference between France and then the rest of the world, to be honest.
No, but exactly.
What was that, a continent size?
And this is the point, really.
Is that a continent or...?
No, that's something like France.
No, France isn't a continent.
And then, I didn't hear the French.
And then leading position is Novell with 12 points. And 12 points is probably something like Europe.
Yeah.
Yep.
But we're still not scoring anything so highly that we're convinced it will achieve world domination, and this is the point.
So nor are we suggesting that they want world domination.
Yeah. But they could do, possibly.
So, Novell.
So, yeah. So, people, let us know your thoughts. Do you think any of these people have got the opportunity for world domination? Let us know if you think that Knopix can have world domination.
Yeah, write to us at show at lugradio.org.
Or Slackware. Everyone seems to be talking about Slackware.
Let's not forget Slackware.
If you think your distribution has the potential to take over the world more than Novell do, then let us know. Oh, we'll talk about ZeroConf.
ZeroConf.
Otherwise known as,
up until about 3 months ago, Rendezvous, which was Apple's branding.
And now known as...
Bonjour! Because...
Why don't they just call it ZeroConf?
Why do they call it ZeroConf?
Because they obviously didn't think the name was cool enough.
Okay.
I think it's a really cool name, ZeroConf.
So do I, actually, but, you know, the IETF thought so, Apple didn't.
Right, so, okay.
Anyway... I think the ballad is now going to say, what's ZeroConf?
No, I'm not going to say, what is it? I know roughly what it is, but why the hell do we need it?
The reason I like... Or perhaps we
should explain to people what it is.
Okay.
Yeah. Explain, Ack.
The idea behind it is ZeroConf is a way of, when you plug computers together into a network...
So a small group of computers.
A small group of computers.
What are we talking, 2, 3, 4?
Yeah. Yeah. 10, okay. 15, 20.
Really?
30. Yeah.
See, I wouldn't use it like that, but anyway.
The idea is that the machines can negotiate between themselves to set up a network, but you don't need any centralized service. You don't need the DHCP server to issue them IP addresses, for example.
Do they have IP addresses?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The other thing you get with ZeroConf is each machine will advertise in a standard way the services that it provides, so the other machines can see them. And see what those services are.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so have Apple adhered to the standard?
Yes.
Have they added anything in?
Not particularly, no.
Oh, okay.
What have we got in terms of open source implementations of ZeroConf? I have to confess, I've not looked into ZeroConf.
There are a couple. Apple actually opened their own implementation.
Right.
Which was nice of them.
Just explain to me how they work out where the default gateway is.
Don't know.
See, I understand how they can negotiate addresses the way basically Windows machines do. If there's no DHCP server, they just give themselves IP addresses, 169.254 something.
And that's the link local address area. Yeah.
But there's no default gateway with that. So how do they find it?
Don't know. Feel free to read the technical shit. I don't know. Okay. I don't know whether there is a default gateway, because I think it's designed to set up a group of computers which can talk amongst themselves.
Oh, okay, that would work then.
That I don't know about. The reason I think it's good is not particularly that you'd use it all the time. It's that if you take your laptop, for example, and you go to a conference...
If you're moving between sites, you can imagine it being
talking to people with Macs who go to conferences,
right.
They'll, you know, flip open the Mac and instantly they'll be able to see everyone else there on iChat.
Right. Yeah.
And they'll be able to collaborate on documents using SubEtherEdit, which is a collaborative document editor. So you wouldn't use it to do every single piece of networking, but when you need it, it's bloody handy to have it.
But
just have it banged in their body for, but it doesn't do anything.
Most systems, if they don't find a DHCP server, they just give themselves an address anyway.
Well, yeah, no. The key point about this is that you could talk to other machines.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can see what they're offering. So you can do things like collaborative iChat or collaborative chatting. You know, game would wake up and it would show you everyone else on the network.
Okay.
So you can talk to them in conferences. I say you can take notes. Someone can bang up a web server and everyone else can see it, run a quick wiki on it or something to take notes, whatever.
So when's this going to happen? When are we going to see it?
If you've got an Apple, you've got it already, apparently.
Yes. There's a goal. I'm on about Linux and open source.
Okay.
There is a goal, isn't there, in Ubuntu? I don't know about other distributions, obviously.
I don't know.
No, I looked into Red Hat. I looked into Fedora when I was using Fedora for our little deal.
Yeah, briefly.
And I did look into it, and I saw a bit about ZeroConf.
Yeah. I've got to admit, with my network engineers head on, I frown upon a ZeroConf. I mean, how difficult is it to set up a DHCP server?
Well, the point is that no one has done it. You can set up... You know, in an ad hoc network, three people walk into a room with, and they've each got the laptops on and a wireless card in them.
Right.
Then bang, you're networked. No one is saying, "Oh, I'll set up the DHCP server." Everyone get a DHCP address from me.
If there's just
me.
Three machines, you just don't bother putting one in, and they all go 169.254, don't they?
Don't know.
Well, that's Windows machines.
But then, how would you find out if I said, "Oh, I'll run a wiki"?
Right.
How would you know what my IP address was?
I'd ask you.
Yeah, but that's the point. You'd have to ask. If I was the other side of the conference there, you couldn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, you see what I mean? Oh,
okay.
So either one guy would have to stand up and go, "I'll run the wiki for this. My IP address is 196.128.79.212 or whatever, something equally.
There's nothing wrong with ease of use as well.
Yeah. Plus, it all just works. You know, you share clipboards across it and stuff like that.
If they work.
Well, yeah, shut up.
So again, when are we going to see it? I mean, is this likely to happen in sometime soon?
So is there a project? Is there a Linux open source?
There is more than one implementation of it.
There's a surprise.
As I say, Apple have open sourced their implementation. But
really?
There is some kind of license problem with it. And I don't know what that problem is. But it's not in Debian, and that's the
reason. Are you surprised, Jimmy?
Not massively.
There is also a thing called Howl, which is a cross-platform Windows and Linux implementation of ZeroConf, but that's not open either, which is done by a firm called Swamp Wolf Software, I think, or something like
so
that.
So is there an actual open source?
And there is an open one as well, but
As
far as I'm aware, it's not complete. You've got two different sets of it. You've got the thing which does the IP addressing thingy, and then you've got the thing which advertises services that your machine is running. And... also,
I'd be interested to look at it.
Also, the actual services, you know, say if you've got Apache running, it has to know about ZeroConf, has to know about the MDNS responder, is what it's called.
Yes.
In order that it can say, "I'm running a web server." You need to tell that I'm running a web server.
Does that require buy-in from the applications?
I'm not.
MDNS
is shit.
That's a service,
isn't it? I don't think it does completely require it. I think you can bang a plugin into it and configure it yourself.
Because later versions of Fedora have got MDNS service, haven't they, or something?
I think so. I mean, that I'm not really sure about.
Okay.
But the point is that it seems like a really good idea to me. It seems like you could bang in and integrate really quickly.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see it happen.
I can certainly see the pluses for it.
Yeah. It's there and people know about it. It just hasn't come up high enough on anyone's priority list yet.
I'm still not sure I approve, but I can see the advantages.
It'd be great to hear from people on the forums and whatnot who have played around with it and their experiences.
No, it wouldn't, because they'd be Apple users. And we never, ever
the open source implementation, how they've got along with either one of these two or three versions, we'll sort of see how it goes and report back to us.
Let us know.
Now, we've talked about open source and software a lot in the past.
Once or twice.
I would hope so.
As in every episode. And something we're going to talk about now. Aid's got... Thank you, Aid. Thank you, Aid. Go on. He's dancing.
Very talented. Moving on.
Sorry, you were saying?
Just hit the mic stand. Well done. something we're going to talk about now is... uses for the kind of contributions people make to open source, but not in software. Now, we talked about this a few episodes back about hardware hacking. You know, I posed the question, why
people
are people...
making contributions to open source,
people making contributions to something.
Contributions in an open source kind of way.
People collaborating is what you're talking about.
So, the example, which we talked about earlier on, was Wikipedia.
Hallelujah.
We like Wikipedia.
We do.
Wikipedia's great.
It's a shining example of collaboration.
Amazing. It's got 500,000 articles, and there's a lot of people who level accusations of bias against it, blah, blah, blah. But
The accuracy is unbelievable.
A lot of it seems really well researched. 500,000 articles.
The other day, I wanted to test it because I was thinking there must be some just shit on there that people haven't written.
Yeah.
I typed in cheese. Most people don't know about cheese, surely.
Apart from you.
And there's this massive section on cheese. It was like Cheese Lovers Anonymous. The cheese user group of Philadelphia decided to write and maintain this Wikipedia article.
And
it's astonishing.
I think it just shows what people can do when they sort of work together for free.
Yeah. The question I wanted to ask, right?
Okay.
Is why does it work in some communities and not others? Now, earlier on, again, when we were talking about, just before Aid arrived for the recording, we were talking about how it seems to work really well for Wikipedia, and you've got software projects such as, Red Hat and GNOME and KDE and all the rest. But it doesn't work for some perfectly admirable projects. For example, OpenStreetMap,
coolness,
which we've talked about in the back.
That's what it is.
Now, OpenStreetMap is... OpenStreetMap is about, again, it's not really a software project. It's about... it's open source.
Collaborating to build maps.
Yeah, basically.
Now,
you mentioned its coolness. Why do you think that?
It is. It's like Jeremy Clarkson's cool wall.
Right.
Right. Why isn't OpenStreetMap cool?
I'd thought OpenStreetMap was very cool.
And usefulness aren't the same thing, which is Clarkson's whole thing, isn't it? And coolness and goodness aren't the same thing. I don't know. I don't know why StreetMap isn't.
But Bind isn't very cool, is it? And that seems to have a fairly popular...
Well, you think it isn't, but...
That's the point. I mean, that's exactly the point.
That's exactly the point,
Raymond was trying to make in The Cathedral and the Bazaar. That pretty much anything you come up with, someone somewhere is going to think it's cool. Yeah. I mean, the OpenStreetMap guy who set it up must think it's cool, or he wouldn't have set it up.
I think it's... And even then,
the project might not be cool. It might be the feeling of contributing might be cool. Mm. Like, there's a guy who maintains... I remember reading a while back, a guy who maintains a library for paper sizes.
Yeah.
Which just sounds so unbelievably dull. But the guy obviously gets a kick out of contributing something to the open source community. Yeah. And that's probably what's cool to that guy.
Yeah, just the fact that you're participating in something which could be really great would conceivably be a motive. I mean, I think, dragging this back to software just temporarily, I think this is why... we're short of things like documentation, because writing documentation is hard and it's not seen as a cool thing. And maybe that's the same as OpenStreetMap.
Yeah.
I was thinking it was the size of when you look at OpenStreetMap and you just think, oh, look at how much we've got to do. It's daunting. But then you think, well, Wikipedia. It's like an encyclopedia.
Exactly.
That's not particularly cool, is it? Surely StreetMap...
Yeah, I mean, maintaining an encyclopedia doesn't sound particularly cool. Whereas creating, brand new mapping information...
It's a very strange phenomenon.
And going
that's
out with a GPS
very
unit.
Strange.
Going out with a GPS unit and all that kind of stuff would seem, on the outset, pretty cool. I mean, I subscribed to the mailing list and unsubscribed fairly shortly after. But they did some quite interesting stuff. But why is it? What are these things?
I was thinking maybe it's because the technical stuff, like Bind is quite technical, and so the geeks are well into that. But they'd be well into GPS as well, surely.
Yeah, exactly.
This is it. And stuff like geocaching seems to have taken off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, or at least there are quite a few people doing it, finding these buried caches of stuff from GPS coordinates and leaving a little note and then moving on and stuff like that. That seems to have taken off. So the OpenStreetMap guy must be sitting there thinking, well, why can't you just, when you're walking to this geocache, write down the map or, transfer the track or whatever it's called, the GPS track, of the way you used to get there, then upload it to OpenStreetMap. People aren't doing that. Why?
Yeah. I mean, I have a kind of a theory.
Go on.
As to why this is the case. Because if you look at, again, moving away from software and moving away from even things such as Wikipedia, if you look at user groups, so Linux user groups, and there's also Java user groups, and there's PHP user groups, and things like that.
Okay.
There's different degrees of sort of enthusiasm with different groups.
Yeah.
So there's tons of Linux user groups, and some of them are massive.
As is the best.
I mean, as an example, we've got a Linux user group, and they vary tremendously between different types of groups. Some people want more formal groups, some people want more social groups.
Yeah.
And you've got things like the Perl Mongers. Yeah.
Exactly.
Now, why are there tons of Linux user groups, and why aren't there hardly any PHP user groups?
I'm amazed by the number of people who are into Perl mongers, for instance.
Exactly.
That's massive. And
so, now that's really interesting. Why are there more Perl user groups and why are there less PHP and Python user groups?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it's to do with the kind of...
That's because
I hate to use these words.
Archaic,
but,
isn't it?
But the social contract that is inherited inside a language or a technology. Perl's a very...
The what? The social contract?
Social contract, yeah. Perl is a very...
Are you talking bollocks?
I'm trying to.
Right, okay.
Now, Perl is a very social language. You know, people write crack on it, don't they?
So what's the social contract? Sorry, you've lost me.
I mean, like, you know, there's some when you get involved in something, there's kind of like rules, like inherent kind of rules, unwritten rules as to how in a community works.
Okay.
So that's what I mean by social contract.
Like getting nominated at Wolves Lug.
Basically. We should explain this. At Wolves Lug, we...
What about the new people who join Wolves Lug now?
No, well, they won't listen to this. at Wolves Lug, we have a curry, and we get quite drunk. And basically, we nominate somebody at the end of the night, usually the new person, and that person gets paper towels thrown at them.
you know the paper towels that you wipe your hands with at the end of a meal?
That's the ones.
There's lemony ones, yeah? Certain people put them in very unclean parts of their body, don't they, Jono?
I don't do that. Some people pretend to wipe
them. I mean, that's a kind of a tradition inside that community.
Right.
I mean, I think that there aren't that many PHP... small communities, because there is no wider PHP community, particularly
like there is
a Perl community.
I don't know. There's a pretty wide PHP community.
I think there is.
I think an awful lot of the people who are using PHP don't feel themselves to be part of a community. It's just a tool.
That's exactly what I think. I think people use PHP.
Do you
PHP
ever have Windows user groups, by the way? Or what? Microsoft user groups?
I think you don't, but you can get your
Microsoft Visual Basic user groups.
I don't think so. I mean, I've seen...
There is, isn't there? We were submitted on the Microsoft website. There was Wolves Lug on there.
Really?
For a Windows user group or something.
I've seen things like that, but they tend to not be, in my experience, at least the ones I've come across, have not been the sorts of social lug sorts of user groups. They're more people to swap technical tips and things. They're like industry focus groups.
Right, yeah. What about Apple and Mac OS user groups?
I don't know.
There are Apple groups, I think.
Right.
It's quite interesting.
It's a very interesting topic.
I'd be interested to sort of see what other people think about it.
Let us know what you think the reason is.
Yeah.
At a show.
At
the radio.
You know, we're asking people to get in touch after every segment.
Just get in touch.
That's because we love our community.
And should we give them a hug?
Let's give them a group hug.
Group hug.
Okay, group hug.
Thanks very much, group.
Lock radio letters.
Wait for it.
Keep sending them in.
Brilliant, isn't it?
Keep sending them in.
So, as you probably guessed, it's the end of the show. It's time for the emails.
It is indeed. So, do you want to begin?
Yeah, I'll kick straight off. I've got a concession ticket here. Now, I personally think he deserves a concession. It's Paul Freeman.
Bastard.
I think I deserve a concession for the price of the Lug Radio ticket, because I'm coming to Lug Radio Live will mean that I see Stuart Langridge's hair. Stuart has got radio hair. Therefore, either I should get a concession, or you should put a warning on the Lug Radio website. Warning, Lug Radio Live contains hair of a ginger nature.
I love the fact that he refers to it as radio hair.
I've got some of their early stuff.
That's
Radiohead.
The important things to bear in mind is, first of all, I've known the bloke for 10 years, and this is how he repays me. And secondly, I'm putting that on the website so you can pay a fucking fiver. Bastard.
Excellent.
Okay. Fantastic. Would you like to go next? Radiohead.
Bastards. Andrew Smith has written in about a thing called the BBS documentary, which is at bbsdocumentary.com, which is a 3DVD documentary that one guy called Jason Scott has spent the last 3 years or so of his life making, which is about bulletin board systems. Now, I used to dial in a lot to BBSs before I discovered the internet.
Yeah. Is this a video documentary?
Before the internet, wasn't it?
Well, before...
There was an internet, but no one knew about it. Yeah.
So is this a video documentary, or is it an audio thing?
As far as I'm aware, it's a video documentary.
Fantastic, I'd love to watch that.
I think Jason Scott is the guy who does textfiles.com.
He's not the guy with the oats?
Not... What, Scott's porridge oats?
Yeah.
No.
All right.
Okay. Or Scott's parage oats. He seems to say on the back here.
parage.
French oats.
Parage.
Yeah, where did you get that from?
It says parage.
You don't want to eat that. You want to eat
anyway,
wheat tar bits.
Jason Scott, we incidentally one Weetabix is called a Weetabix. Here, really? No argument about this. Anyway, Jason Scott has done BBS documentary at bbsdocumentary.com. Should be cool.
Yeah, cool. I've had an email from a chap called Marcus, who works for an organisation called Vodes.net. I'm not entirely sure what a Vode is, but anyway, he starts off by saying hedge, so I'm assuming that he's not English. He says, perhaps you're interested in this thing
hedge.
Here. Hedge.
As H-E-J. In Dutch or something, yeah. It is.
You're assuming that?
No, I actually know that a little bit. Matt would know.
Matt would know, this fucking pointless language man that he is. He says we are working on the setting up of the INCC, which is the Interactive Network Community Company, which produces, trades and promotes its digital content. This infrastructure is not owned by any shareholders but voters. He doesn't really explain what a voter is, so if he wants to let us know what it is, but it basically sounds like a means of transporting digital content around, and we're all into the whole Creative Commons thing, so looks quite interesting.
Yeah.
So basically you need to go to Vodes.net.
Vodes.net.
V-O-D-E-S.
V-O-D-E-S, yeah. So have a look at that. Thank you very much, Marcus.
Okay. Garen Evans has written in.
Okay.
We often talk about the hash key and the fact that it's not called the hash key. And pressing it and we get no hash.
This is very
apparently, he's actually done a bit of research and it's not the pound key. Remember?
Did he open his keyboard up or something? There's a massive bifter in there.
Yes. Anyway, apparently it is officially called...
The Octothorpe.
Yes, the Octothorpe, as in eight Thorpes, apparently.
Is that like Ben Thorpe?
You can get a Google
about eight arms. Mr. Ben with eight arms. An Octothorpe.
That's an octopus, you idiot.
I'm sure Mr. Ben's going to appreciate that.
So, Garen Evans, thanks for writing and clearing it up for us. Very good.
I've got one here from a guy called Serge Plues. Big Husky
Serge?
SF is his new name, it seems. He says, one of the things I want to point out for last week's Distro Wars is that for home accessibility, one thing that should be considered is what does it take to play music, MP3s, or even watch movies and DVDs. It's okay for distros that are free to not have it included and show you workarounds on how to get it done, which most of them do.
Yeah.
But if you have to pay 50, 60, 70 or more bucks and you still can't play music, then something is wrong. That is one of the reasons why Suzy is losing more ground for the normal home user, which I think is a very good
point. Interesting
point. If you're paying money for distribution, you bloody well ought to get MP3 decoding included in
that. Yeah, that's very true. But didn't Reel recently, the Linux version of Reel, haven't they included MP3 support?
That's the Helix project. They're basically saying, I think the idea...
No, have they actually given us license to use MP3?
I don't think so.
I thought Reel had paid for it for
that,
us.
That'd be interesting to look at, because I use RealPlay on my machine. I downloaded it.
Yeah.
The new version. It seems pretty
Helix
cool.
Doesn't
it work,
it
and
default.
It works fine.
Yeah.
Partly because I can't get
to. I'll
tell you
what, we'll try and get someone from the Helix project on the show. I did an interview with a guy for one of the magazines, and he was a really interesting chap.
Was it Make
Magazine? It wasn't Make Magazine. More on Make Magazine later.
Yes, we know Jono's on a bunk.
Shut up.
I mean, isn't on a bunk.
I've had an email from a guy with the finest surname ever. His name is Jeffrey Bacon. And the subject of the email is God, You Fucking Rock, which is...
It's not your brother, is it?
No, not Jeffrey. Shut up. Okay. But he says, in case you deem this email worthy for some precious airtime, I'll give you a short comment and then I'll kiss your asses for three or four paragraphs, which you can read, copy, frame, or smoke at your leisure.
We are instantly fucking all in favour of people doing this.
Yeah.
So if you want to ring and, you know, tell us how brilliant we are, or...
And we will smoke it at our leisure. He basically goes on to say that the Linspire interview from the last episode was phenomenal.
Yeah,
he said, probably the best non-tech interview yet. I felt Kevin Carmody was open and honest and very straightforward about Linspire's goals and contributions to open source software. He's really outdone himself as Kevin, and everyone seems to have admired the interview, so that's
indeed
good stuff.
Okay. I've got a subject here for you. It says, hello from not the usual profile listener.
All right.
Okay. So this is a guy who says, hello, Jono, Matt, Ack, and Aid.
Hello.
Hello.
In your previous show, you asked for listeners who do not fit the usual profile of Linux users to make contact. I'm a British Pakistani and a Muslim. Thanks for showing that not all open source software users are bearded, sandal wearing boffins who work in labs.
Just Jono.
Not far off, actually.
I don't wear sandals.
All the rest is true, though.
I work with Daniel Barron, and you can thank him for introducing me to your show. Regards, Imran Chowdhury.
Excellent.
Daniel Barron, who's going to be on the radio?
I fell off my chair laughing at the totem tonto confusion and Ack's experience with the National Lottery website.
Excellent.
Brilliant.
Thank you very much, Imran.
Thanks for writing.
We've got a mail here from Michael Labovich, who says, great show as always, and then goes on to bollock us about not including Debian in Distro Wars.
Hang on a minute, half the distros are Debian-based in Distro
Wars.
No.
He's very clear about this. He says, here are my two reasons why. Ubuntu, Lindows, Zandros, etc. are not Debian. There are significant differences between them and Debian. Debian has 9,000 packages, has been ported to lots of architectures, most of which are not supported anymore, and it's made for the people who like living life the hard way.
We all like that, don't we?
Here's a proof that he's an American guy. All of the people that still drive manual cars and do their taxes on paper, don't disappoint you here, but practically everyone in the UK drives a manual car, and practically everyone in the UK does their taxes on paper. So perhaps we're many years behind the Americans on this, but there you go.
The car thing's true. I'm not sure about the taxes. Surely not.
I do my taxes on paper.
Oh, I don't do taxes, but...
That's because you're...
Fucking Inland Revenue will be getting in touch with you.
That's because you're a peg seller.
he could blame to us because we included Gentoo and didn't include Debian, and apparently Debian would have got a non-evil score of 6 on our rating score from -5 to 5, which would have resulted in it beating our sacred cow Ubuntu. Well, we're glad you think so. He says, good luck at Lug Radio Live, so thanks very much, Michael Labovich.
Okay, the final email that I've got in front of me is from Matthew Gates... at porpoisehead.net, which is an interesting name for a website. He says, hi, as discussed with Matt Ravel, we're having a little trouble getting people to be interested in Northumberland Lug. If you could do a call to arms on the show, that'd be absolutely fantastic.
Come on, Northumberland.
So, people in Northumberland, there's got to be people up there. I'm sure it's not just schwooking that up... sort of higher than Wolverhampton part of the country. The lug page is mailman.lug.uk/mailman/listinfo/Northumberland, which I'm assuming is accessible on the normal lug.org.uk web pages.
Yep.
He says, if people subscribe and post the mailing list, we can get started. Meetings will probably be in Morpeth or Alnwick, depending on convenience for potential members. Now, I know how difficult
it is. And can you bring your whippets and stuff?
You can smoke your white vines. You can smoke your wood vines, bring your whippets and scrub your step in the convenience of all the other people. I know how hard it is to get a lug going, so Matt, keep up the good work, and I'm sure people will hopefully respond and come and get a good lug going up there.
Okay, I've got last one then. I've got one from Joel Padreza. I think, yeah. He said, over the last few weeks, I've heard you talk about GNOME, KDE, XFCE, even mentioned Fluxbox. You've spoken of Cairo and XGL. I'm just curious to hear what you think of Enlightenment DR17. Well, personally, I'm striving for it.
not that kind of Enlightenment. Oh, right.
I haven't used Enlightenment for years, so I couldn't honestly say, to be honest.
Part of the problem there is neither was anyone else, because Rastaman went away and said, I'm going to rewrite the whole thing from scratch, and then disappeared into a box for 3 years.
Is it still on 0.13, as it has been since 1986?
DR17.
It
seems to be coming close to release now. I mean, possibly loads of Enlightenment guys have gone, no, it was released ages ago, but it disappeared for ages while they were working on it, rewriting loads of it and everything. It's...
So Enlightenment people, let us concentrate.
Yeah, I mean, really hard to get it.
It used to be really cool, and it was this real kind of movie Aussie sort of thing. Yeah. But it seems to have become rapidly irrelevant by the fact they didn't do anything with it for 4 years.
Right.
Is that just your opinion, or genuinely?
Genuinely, they didn't seem to do it. I mean, there was a lot.
Give it a look.
There seemed to be a lot of work going on behind the scenes, but they basically rewrote everything as far as I can tell.
Yeah. I mean, that was my impression, so... Shall we move on to important business?
I believe we should. We've got good Lug Radio live news for
you. We have some fantastic live news. Lots been going on recently. And if you're thinking about coming, or if you are coming, stay tuned for at least the next few minutes. You've been listening to about 60 minutes of Lug Radio, so I don't see why you won't switch off now. Right, first of all, exhibitors.
Well, you would switch off now.
No, you shouldn't switch off. You can listen to us for 60 minutes.
Never mind.
Never mind, John.
So, actually, let's start with the speakers, right?
Okay, yeah, go for it.
Now, we're going to have Ian Bell coming down.
Mr. Ian Bell has confirmed.
Right, yes.
Thank you.
So, right, I'm going to read them out. You two sort of inform our listeners what they do.
Aye.
Okay, Ian Bell.
Elite.
He wrote Elite and shaped my early formative years.
Right, Colin Watson.
Ubuntu and Canonical Hacker.
Friend of Sherlock.
We have also got Sarah Ewan.
Oh, PlayStation Bird.
Could you like to elaborate more on PlayStation Bird?
She works for Sony, and she's involved in the PlayStation, in Linux on the PlayStation.
That's
project.
Correct. We have got Jonathan Riddell.
KDE and Kubuntu.
Yes, we have indeed.
Or Ubuntu.
Ubuntu. We've got Gervais Markham.
Gervais Markham.
Mozilla Project.
Mozilla.
Who's going to be talking about fishing?
He is indeed.
With a PH, Angler. By the way, before any of those anglers start packing their bags and coming down.
Loads of people walking in with their fishing
rods. And landing rods and boxes of maggots.
We've got James
Wallbank.
You know,
maggots are the only life form that are sold by volume rather than number.
The pint.
That's fantastic.
Sold by the pint. Yep. James Wallbank runs the A2RT project, Access to Recycled Technology, up in Sheffield.
He does. Well, he doesn't. He runs the RTI project. Which is like A2RT.
It's very similar.
Oh, right, okay, whatever.
They're all the same.
Lowtech.org or something.
But I know you know about this guy, Simon Willison.
Simon Willison. Simon. Top heroic champion wearpacker, who also tech edited my book. Well done, Simon, we love
and
you.
And what's that book, Ak, and where can we get it from?
You can't get it from anywhere yet, but it's going to be out in like the next week or so. It's okay. The HTML Utopia.
No, you're not allowed to talk brilliant. About it. You expressly told me not to pimp Linux desktop hacks, which incidentally is published by Orion.
And I'm in it, so you should buy it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so is well.
It's the Lug Radio Show. The only person who wasn't in was Matt.
And you should buy Grease Monkey hacks when it comes out, because I'm in that as well.
Enough with the pimping. Who else have we got?
I'm going to be in Life Hacks
Shut
as well.
Up.
And I'm writing another book.
And so am I.
So you're stuck on my fat one.
So am I.
Anyway, we've got Drew McClellan.
Another top quality web hacker runs allinthehead.com.
We have got the man with the roundest head ever, John Masters.
Colonel hacker, extraordinaire, child prodigy.
Embedded hacker.
Yeah, bedded hacker.
not
recently.
Yeah, Norfolk Inchons again, I think.
We've also got Bill Thompson.
BBC journalist.
Yes. Uh-huh. Much revered on the Slashdot story.
Yeah. He got a bit of grief on there, didn't he?
He did, yeah.
He did.
Calm down.
Calm down.
More to the point, you know, if you disagree with the bloke, come and ask him questions. Yeah. That's the point. He's turning up.
If anyone's not familiar with this, we actually got Slashdotted about Lug Radio Live. Was it yesterday?
Yep. Incidentally, yep. Server held up fucking perfectly. Yes.
Thank God.
It doesn't between 12 and 12:15 in the morning, but
when the cron job stops and restarts the patch.
But it does when the combined boots of Slashdot and trample on it. We've also got, now this is a brand new, we've got Dan Barron, we've already confirmed.
Uh-huh. Dan's Guardian.
Yeah. Which is Dan's Guardian. We've got a brand new one here.
Well, hey,
we've got Christian Schallers coming all the way from Barcelona to talk about Fluendo.
Fluendo.
He's a gnome hacker.
That's a little pink bird, isn't it?
What?
Fluendo.
Oh, I thought you meant a gnome hacker.
Oh, that's a flamingo, isn't it?
With one leg. Yes.
He's got a leg to stand on.
And we've got Rufus Pollock.
Rufus.
From FFII, who we spoke to on an earlier show.
So, this is all brand new, because you might have heard some of these.
This is the really important stuff.
This is, yes, and then we get into the really,
really
important
stuff. Not that our speakers aren't important, obviously.
No, of course. We've got the exhibitors now. These are confirmed so far. We are still in the process of looking for more exhibitors.
Yeah.
Confirming them, so we've emailed a ton of people.
Yep.
And if you're an exhibitor and you want to come down, let us know.
Yeah, if you want to come down, run a stand, talk to people about your free software project.
You've got to come down. So, we've got the Association for Free Software.
The AFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFFF
Really? All right. Now, great thing about O'Reilly coming down is they're going to give a 30% discount to everyone who comes to
the
show.
We love O'Reilly.
So you can get fantastic books such as Linux Pass at
30% off. Yeah.
Yep.
So that's going to be brilliant.
It's going to be superb. We're going to have Bytemark, who are the virtualization company.
How many O'Reilly books do you own?
I've got tons.
So have I.
I've got the free copy of Linux Desktop Hacks that I got.
Really? A good two-thirds of my books are O'Reilly.
Yeah. A good no-thirds of my books are O'Reilly.
But you've got a library. You must have loads of books.
Yeah, I have got loads of books. There's no O'Reilly books.
No, you've probably got a particular mockingbird.
This is no tell of a lie. Ever since I started getting into open source and ever since I started writing, it's been my ambition to write for O'Reilly. Mm-hmm. I absolutely adore O'Reilly books. So, yeah, got tons of them.
So O'Reilly, who else is coming? O'Reilly coming down, 30% discount.
Yep, so we've got Bytemarker coming down, guys who actually host Lugradio.org, so they're a superb company.
And cryogenics.org and johnobacon.org.
That's right. So we've got the InfoPoint project coming down.
InfoPoint. Who started that then?
I did. they're coming down not far because they're in Wolverhampton. They're coming to talk to people, and this is going to be kind of a means of sort of inspiring other InfoPoints around the country because Kat's doing a great job running the project now.
And Dave.
Kat and Dave, yes. Ginger Dog, as he's known. We've got, speaking of dogs, we've got Ginger Dog, that is. We've got Scun Dog coming down.
Ah, right, okay.
Scunthorpe and Doncaster Lug, they're going to be exhibiting.
Good stuff.
We've also got the KD Project. Headed by the Master Ravel.
They're coming down to give us a kick in,
aren't
they?
No, Master Ravel.
So they're coming down. So
are they paintballing with us to next day as well?
Hopefully.
They're going to shoot the hell out of us.
It's been mentioned on the
forums.
Okay.
Some KDE guy on the forums reckons they're going to shoot us. So you wish, KDE guy.
We've also got the master that is the spline boy is coming down.
3D man.
To demo his potentially retina-destroying technology. So he's going to be coming down to show everyone his 3D scanner that he built out of duct tape.
You know, his next project is an MRI thing, isn't it? Seriously.
He's building an MRI.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll watch him scan some other people with that, I think.
Have you seen there was, there's like, someone pointed out to me, oh no, it was Neuro. Do you remember we went to the Smooth Wall batch?
Yeah.
And that was that open MRI or something.
Oh yeah.
Do you remember that? Fucking nuts. Anyway, we've also got Open Advantage coming down to hopefully have a stand there. Fantastic
okay.
organisation. Employ brilliant people, obviously.
and John.
John Bacon.
Bastards. And then we've also got Mike Hearn is coming down, who was
you remember we spoke to him recently.
We
yeah.
did indeed.
Auto Package.
He's coming down to represent Auto Package, Wine and Code Weavers.
He'll have three heads.
Busy
hats.
Busy
whatever.
Man.
So we've got lots going on. That's, like I say, they're just they've confirmed so far. We've still got another, 5 weeks till the show.
Tell us about the competitions, John.
We're going crazy about it. Now, this is brilliant. We've got competitions.
Oh, we've
so
got competitions coming out of our...
ears!
That's the word I was looking for.
In fact, we have competitions. We have competitions about competitions.
We have.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we're shit at thinking up competitions.
Just thinking
so
in general.
Why should we think about them? You all should think about them. So, you have got the opportunity to win a free subscription to Make Magazine.
That's makemagazine.com.
A free subscription to Make Magazine, donated by the fantastic O'Reilly. And we've got to give a shout out to Josetta O'Reilly, who's coming down to represent O'Reilly. She's
okay.
superb. So, now, if you want to win this subscription to Make Magazine, you've got to think up
a suitable competition. Yes.
Okay. It can be anything.
You've got to think up a competition.
The prize for that competition will be £100 worth of free O'Reilly books.
Yes.
So, that's the prize for the competition, but remember, you get the Make Magazine for thinking of the competition.
Yeah. Yeah. The key point about this is you have to be coming to Lug Radio Live
yeah.
to enter.
If you're not coming, you're not eligible.
You are quite welcome to enter and suggest to us a competition, but you don't get a free subscription to Make Magazine.
You have to be able to collect
unless
it
you
on
turn
the
up to Lug Radio yeah. Live, we are afraid.
Now, please bear in mind, this is Lug Radio. Anything generally goes.
So no,
although,
like, raffles
although,
and stuff like that.
In all honesty, I really don't want to see the arses of most of the people. I don't want, like, best arse competition or knobbly knees competition.
It wouldn't be fair for me to win, though, Johnny.
No, but I can't tell the face, the difference between, you know, your head and your arse. So it might be good to sort of see that.
What, my arse?
And
see my arse? Okay.
So if, are we going to get
that's one of the competitions.
That's one of the competitions. Yeah. So send your entries to show@lugradio.org.
Suggest a competition for us.
Yes, and obviously you can chat about them on the forums, but unless you mail us them at show@lugradio.org, they don't qualify.
No.
So you've got to mail us.
Okay.
Okay, so... as many of you will know, we're doing paintball the day after.
There will be a prize.
There will be a prize. Another £100 worth of free O'Reilly
books.
All
the runners-up will just get paintball bruises, won't they?
Yes, they will. Bruises. So the winning team, and when we get there, we'll obviously all stand up against the wall and pick each other things like in school. No, we'll
like any goal again.
We'll split into a few teams, and we'll play paintball, and the best team... will win £100 worth of O'Reilly books as
between
well.
Between them.
Yeah,
yep.
Between
yep.
them.
Once again, you obviously have to be coming to enter this, and you have to sign up for the paintball if you haven't already done
yeah.
so.
Yes. This is
you
actually
can sign
urgent.
Up on the website.
This is pretty urgent.
You haven't
need to
got
go
much
sign
time
up.
For the paintball, to be honest.
Yeah, we need to book numbers for the day after. So it's going to be absolute quality. So go and do that.
You've got probably a couple of weeks to sign up, which would be
a week or so from when the show comes out.
From this show, yeah.
So
yeah.
when you hear this show, if you want to do the paintball and you haven't signed up, go and do it.
To do it, you need to go to the Lug Radio Live site and
scroll
click on the buy tickets
down
link.
To the bottom link. That's usually the paintball link.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've got one more competition at the moment, and this is for the person who's furthest travelled.
Yes.
We respect the fact that people are travelling quite a distance to come to Lug Radio Live. No, this doesn't include anyone coming like 10 miles away. If you're coming from Dudley, you don't count. No, people are literally travelling over water to get here.
And remember, international visitors, they get in free.
They do. International
if you can
visitors
show us your
get
passport,
in free.
You get in free.
You're in free because we appreciate that.
Yeah.
So the person who travels the furthest... Now, this is... You basically need to bring your flight card.
Yes.
To show us which airport you came
from. Your departure airport.
So, if you come from wherever, bring your flight card,
And
so if you really want to win, get on a plane to Australia,
yep,
and then set off from there.
And then fly back. And as, and as a prize for spending £2,000 on flight tickets to Australia and back again, you will win
a free subscription to Mate Magazine. So we've got some good competitions on the go. I'll say
there will
thing.
Be more.
There will be more, because we've got prizes coming out of our ears.
And arses.
And arses. So, it's all looking superb. We have got, of course, the great... we've got the masturbate.
Don't forget the masturbate. It was pointed out in a letter that that actually sounds like something else, and we say
so it sounds like what?
I don't know.
Really?
Couldn't possibly. Really?
Maybe the great Linux.
Surely we can overlook that.
Yes. So, yeah, we've got the masturbate. We're going to have a steam panel of people on there. And
what, a steamed panel?
Yeah, we're going to steam them.
Steam them? Oh, yeah. Right, that's healthy.
We've got the LAN gaming. We went down the other day to look at the...
Yeah, the venue's
the
awesome.
It looks
yeah.
the business. So, it's going to be superb. And is there anything else we need to talk about?
I think that's about it.
I think that'll do
Remember,
it.
Remember, there's only going to be one more show before Lug Radio
one
Live.
One more show. So go and buy your tickets. You've got to come to Lug Radio Live. It's going to be absolute quality.
Be there or be a rhomboid.
Be there or be a rhomboid. And, of course, we're going to be sort of having some drinks the night before for people who arrive beforehand, the night after. One thing I did discover today... The hotel, the second hotel, the official hotel, is now run out of double rooms.
Okay.
You need, there's about 20 single rooms left.
I should imagine most people are coming to Lug Radio single anyway.
Sweeping. Nice about the fans.
Sweeping generalisation. So we'll speak to you all soon.
Yeah. Thanks
for
Catch you later, guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.